A warm welcome to a very wet London. Thanks for all those in the room who've braved the weather, and welcome to those on the line who have dialed in. I'm John Holland-Kay. I'm the new Chief Executive of Heathrow Airport. With me are Jose Leo, our Chief Financial Officer, Andrew Effiong, our Treasurer, and Anne Hearn, who leads our Debt Investor Relations team. I'm going to take you through the highlights, so I get the good job. Then Jose is going to take us through the detail. And then I'll come back at the end to talk a little bit about strategy and my ambitions for Heathrow. So let me start by just jumping onto the slide headed 2014 half-year highlights and just run through a few of those points. And the first point is it's been a great half-year so far. And we've been able to welcome more passengers than we ever have before. We're up just under 2% in terms of passenger volume growth, with no real increase in the number of flights. So this is all about higher load factors and slightly larger planes. And in spite of that, we've been able to achieve record levels of both punctuality and passenger experience. So a good start to the year. And of course, we've opened Terminal 2, which is the latest part of the transformation of Heathrow, and funded very much through the generosity of those here. So we very much appreciate your support for helping to transform Heathrow into one of the great airports of the world. Our financial performance for 2014 has also started well. Revenue is up 7.4%. EBITDA is up 15.4%. That's the main measure that we look at internally. And we've secured £1.3 billion of attractively priced debt financing. I'm not sure I should say it was attractively priced, given that some of you will have helped to price it. But certainly from our point of view, we're very pleased that we've been able to take advantage of the current markets and that we're very well placed from a financial point of view. But this performance sees Heathrow not only remaining the third biggest airport in the world, the largest hub airport in Europe, but most importantly, one of the best performing and one of the best from a passenger point of view airports in the whole of Europe. And that allows us to give a good springboard to achieve what I want to achieve, which is to make Heathrow not one of the best airports in Europe, but one of the best airports in the world. Now, moving on to slide four, just to illustrate the improvements we've made in passenger satisfaction. The top chart shows quarterly passenger satisfaction over the last 7-8 years, and you can see how far Heathrow has come from being at the bottom of the ladder to among one of the top, and you'll see that we're now touching on the top quartile among European airports. So we've come a long way. We have a long way to go. We are ambitious to outperform this, and you'll see that relatively we are moving up the rankings. We're now very close to taking over as the leading major airport in Europe. You'll see here the departures punctuality is up at 81%. That's a key measure of efficiency of the airport. The more punctual the airport is, the lower cost for airlines operating here, the better it is for passengers because there are less delays on the ground. So it's a good measure of our performance. The final point here is around baggage performance. You'll see that although we're substantially better than we were a few years ago, we did have some baggage issues at the end of June, and that has impacted on our baggage performance, which we measure through baggage misconnect rate. We are taking that as a good illustration of how where we have come a long way. We still have a long way to go to get to the levels of passenger service we aspire to. Moving on now to where the traffic growth is coming from. And unsurprisingly, a lot of this is coming from long-haul intercontinental traffic. That's what Heathrow does. We have a mix of short-haul flights feeding long-haul routes. Typically, you need about 2 short-haul flights to every 1 long-haul plane, and that allows us to have regular direct flights to the growth markets around the world, day in, day out, every time of the year. And that's what makes Heathrow different to any other airport in the UK, and different to most other airports in the world. North America has done well. We've got some new destinations and frequencies there. We've got new routes to Austin, Texas, and more frequencies for Charlotte and Los Angeles is now using the A380 service. In Asia Pacific, we've opened up some new routes there. We've got Philippine Airlines to Manila, a place I used to work. I'm very glad to see a direct flight going to that important growth market. We've also had more flights going to Shanghai and Guangzhou, so that's helping to build connections between the UK and China, and a new route to Chengdu as well with British Airways, which is great to see. And in Latin America, we've grown traffic from both Mexico and Brazil. You won't be surprised that Brazil is doing well, or has been doing well, ahead of the World Cup. But we've also been able to add a new route to Bogota in Colombia with Avianca out of Terminal 2. That hasn't yet started to come through in terms of passenger volumes, but it shows that we're working hard to make sure that Britain stays connected to the growth markets of the world. We've seen some growth in UK domestic markets. A lot of that is the maturity of the Virgin domestic services. And in Europe, we've been able to hold our volume there. If you remember, that grew very quickly last year after the British Airways acquisition of BMI. Cargo is interesting as well. You will know that Heathrow is the main cargo port for the UK, particularly for high-value items. And it's one of the things that distinguishes us from other airports around the UK. So it's connecting not only business travellers with the world, but also making sure we can get exports to market. And cargo volumes were up 4%, primarily for China, Brazil, Japan and the USA. So good growth markets around the world. Just looking at how that compares with the other leading hub airports, you'll see, and you may not be surprised to see, we're pretty resilient. We've seen growth of between 2.5% and 3.5% for Frankfurt, Charles de Gaulle and Schiphol. Our number is about 2% in terms of passenger traffic over 12 months, but actually 3% when you adjust for the Olympic Games. So pretty robust performance there. We could be doing much, much more. There's huge demand out of London, particularly to connect to some of the markets that we don't currently get to. And so this is a competition that we should be winning with the right capacity. Terminal 2, I hope that some of you will have had the chance to enjoy Terminal 2 or may have been able to join us for the opening. £2.5 billion investment. We delivered it on time and within budget. It comprises the main terminal building, satellite building, a car park and an energy centre. And it's the main home for the Star Alliance. So we have 23 Star Alliance airlines together under one roof. That allows them to build better connections between themselves, but also to start to connect better to British Airways in Terminal 3 and Terminal 5, and connect with Aer Lingus and Virgin Little Red, who are both going to be in Terminal 2. We've got about 40% of our passengers moved in already. We'll be completing that by the end of October, and it has gone very well so far. And we've tried to use Terminal 2 as a model for improving passenger service, and the feedback so far has been fantastic. And I got a text from one passenger who was delighted with the service he got. He arrived and from his plane in T2A, getting through the gate to getting off his train, Heathrow Express at Paddington, took him 29 minutes. And 15 of that was just sitting on the train. That is a world-class service, and it shows that Heathrow is in absolutely the right place to do what Britain needs. Moving on to the next slide, I will hand over to Jose, who will take you through the financial detail. Thank you.
Thank you, John, and good afternoon. In looking at the financial performance for this first half of the year, clearly we have had a very steady and robust start. Clearly, the growth in revenue is very healthy, by 7.4%. It is reflecting, no doubt, the impact of the first quarter of the year, which happens to be the last quarter of Q5, and we will come on to that in a minute. Clearly, it's a time where we still have tariff increases of RPI plus 7.5%. But indeed, the traffic has been very robust as well, growing 1.9% year on year. It's the first time that Heathrow Airport is delivering more than 35 million passengers in the first half of the year. So this is a record number of passengers. On the other hand, operating costs performance is really good. The costs still go down year on year. Once again, we will come on to that in a second. The second half of the year, as we already predicted when we published our forecast for the year, both in December 2013 and June this year, the second half of the year is going to be impacted by the opening, the full opening, and the operation of the new Terminal 2. Looking at the balance sheet side of the numbers, clearly the debt growth is consistent with the guidance. There is more growth in debt in the first half of the year than in the second, but it still is well inside the limits of our expectations and our forecast. We expect our gearing levels to remain consistent with the information we have published so far. In summary, a steady and good set of results, and more importantly, fully consistent with our expectations back in June. Looking at the revenues in more detail, clearly the growth in revenue by 7.4% is dominated by the aeronautical element. It's 10.7%. The growth in aeronautical revenues is underpinned by the first quarter of the year. At that time, the tariff increases were still RPI plus 7.5%, so 10.4% year-on-year. On top of that, we have the growth in traffic, 1.9%. And also, probably you remember that we mentioned a number of times we had what we call yield dilution in the similar period of 2013 that hasn't happened in 2014. And not only that, but we have recovered part of that dilution through the tariff mechanism, the K-factor mechanism that we mentioned a number of times. Clearly, our expectation is that in the second half of the year, the tariff increases will be different. We are now subject to an RPI minus 1.5% increase in tariff year-on-year. From the point of view of the retail, the retail income is growing by 3.5%. There is mainly driven by performance in the car parking revenues and car rental revenues. The concessions, the retailers, the operating in our airports, particularly World Duty Free and specialist shops, are performing slightly more modestly. There are a number of reasons for that. One of them is the strengthening of the pound year-on-year, which is clearly impacting the competitiveness of the pricing in our outlets. On the other hand, temporarily, anyone traveling through T5 would have noticed that the south side of the terminal, we have a number of shops being refurbished. We are refurbishing that retail area. Clearly, this is impacting the revenues. Everything was already a factor in our budget, and it was expected, but we expect to have significant benefits out of those refurbishment activities. This is one of the underpinnings of our improvement in commercial revenues at the end of this year and indeed over the rest of the quinquennium. So it is good news from the point of view of our plans to enhance commercial revenues, but obviously temporarily is impacting the ability to grow retail revenues. Also, something I would like to highlight is the Bureau de Change. Bureau de Change was one of those activities that was underperforming in the last quarter of 2013 and the first quarter of 2014. We mentioned that that was down to a change in the supplier, a change in the concessionaire. Now the new concessionaire is fully, let's say, working, Monicorp, and we expect, obviously, that to deliver a much better performance. Actually, in the second quarter of the year, we have seen Bureau de Change revenues growing by 9% year-on-year. Looking at the cost performance, clearly very solid cost performance. We are reporting a headline reduction of 1.7%. Once again, we mentioned that in the quarter one results presentation, There were some one-offs amounting to around £10 million in the staff costs in 2013. So if we take that on board, probably the performance will be more flat year on year. Still, a number of the initiatives, a number of the decisions and the elements of our Q6 business plan that we have been implementing are starting to deliver benefits. You know, we have applied a salary freeze to all the senior management for 2 years. We also undertook a significant reorganization of our corporate resources, the overhead. And recently we have, after a very, very, let's say, positive and very engaging set of negotiations with our trade unions, we have finally agreed on a 2-year pay rise below inflation with our trade unions that will impact more than 5,000 people on the front line of our airport. So it's really good news, because after a good number of years of pay rises about inflation, now we know that 2014 and 2015 we will be delivering below inflation salary increases. So we are working really constructively with our unions, but we are looking across the cost, let's say, across the different elements of the cost, suppliers, you know, the new baggage contract is already delivering significant savings, and we are not letting any stone unturned in order to deliver, and potentially, as John probably will share with you later, beating our plan. Obviously, the revenue and cost performance that we have just discussed is continuing delivering double-digit growth in adjusted EBITDA, which, you know, we reiterate all the time is the underpinning of our investment plan, the transformation that we have made in the airport, and indeed the transformation that we carry on, we plan to continue doing at Heathrow. Once again, it's clear that the growth we have witnessed in the first half of the year in terms of EBITDA, 31% year-on-year in quarter one, 15.5% year-on-year of 5 years, is not going to be maintained over the rest of the year. As I mentioned before, we continue expecting a growth year-on-year of EBITDA of around 8%, but it's still a very healthy and solid performance. In terms of how that translates into our cash flows from operations, well, the summary of this slide, which many of you are familiar with, is that definitely we carry on financing the vast majority of our capital plan with cash flows generated internally after paying interest. So more than 75% of the CapEx is now financed through an equity element, if you like. And this is going to improve over the rest of the queue. You know, in the quinquennium, we expect to be cash flow positive after CapEx. And indeed, the second part of the year, this year, although is not delivering the same level of growth in terms of EBITDA year on year, is the second half of the year, you know, in terms of cash, generates more cash than the first part of the year. Normally, it's around 65% of our EBITDA, 65% of the cash we generate in the business is generated in the second half of the year. So we expect the growth in debt to be relatively modest going forward. The translation of that in terms of the gearing ratios, which are governing our financing and our commitments with the capital markets, are clearly a picture where the headroom remains substantial, well inside the limits of our junior gearing trigger of 85% and Heathrow Finance covenant level of 90%. And you know, we have a commitment, we have a guidance that we have been maintaining consistently to run the business well below the 85% of the junior gearing trigger, normally around 80%. So even looking at that from the point of view of the junior debt, we are well inside the limits, and we expect the end of the year to deliver consistent gearing ratios. and definitely consistent with our forecast previously disclosed. As John said, we have been taking advantage of the attractive market conditions over the first half of the year to make progress on our debt financing program, to the point that we can say today we have completed in full the original program. We have already issued over £1.3 billion in, attractive, but definitely is attractive, price debt financing conditions. We have undertook two successful Class A public offerings in both euro and Canadian dollars. So we are following and delivering in terms of our commitments to deliver a multi-currency platform. Let's say regularly, although not frequently, coming back to the markets we have been considering strategic to us. On top of that, we have clearly been working hard on the private placement arena, raising £600 million in 2014. Most of those transactions have been in Class A, but very recently as yesterday, we closed a new Class B private placement transaction by £110 million. So, in summary, we are taking advantage and exploring every opportunity to reduce the cost of debt, because you know the cost of debt is one of those elements that can make us beat the settlement that the CAA has recently approved. What is the plan for the rest of the year, bearing in mind that we have done already what we expected? Well, the plan is to continue, to the extent that the attractive market conditions remain, to continue, issuing or implementing new financing transactions. Obviously, that will involve an element of pre-financing, but still we believe that this is appropriate, is prudent, and it will make sense in the current circumstances. As a result of all of that, literally over the last 3 months, we have extended our liquidity horizon by 1 year. Now our liquidity is taking us comfortably until the end of 2016, taking into account, of course, all the maturities, the interest payment, interest debt service, and indeed the dividend program that we have committed with our shareholders. In summary, a strong performance, particularly proud, as John said, of the continued strong overall passenger satisfaction. We think that seeing the number of passengers growing and our financials evolving successfully is good, but it's even better to realize that this is happening whilst our passengers are getting increasingly satisfied with the level of service we provide. Very healthy traffic growth, driven by the right kind of traffic that HAP is supposed to be delivering, intercontinental long-haul traffic. The opening of Terminal 2, which we consider a landmark in our transformation of the airport, has been very successful. Good financial performance. The news about the strengthening of our global financing platform that I have just commented on. And as a result of all of that, we want to reiterate the guidance that we gave literally 1 month ago when we released our investor report. We expect to grow our turnover by 8.4% year on year to £2.68 billion. And indeed, we expect the EBITDA to grow by close to 8% to £1.53 billion. And with that, I finish that section, and I will hand over to John, that he will talk you now through the strategy for the coming years. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jose. So let me move on to my view for the business. And this very much builds on what you will have heard from Colin Matthews over the last few years. So this isn't radical, this is improvement, but it is acceleration. So I've got four messages that I give to my team, and I'll show them with you as I share them with them. And the overall objective is that we take Heathrow from being one of the best airports in Europe to being one of the best airports in the world. And the reason I say that is that once we get to where we've been aiming for in Europe, as we have been doing over the last few years, we can't stop there. We need to keep on improving to make sure that Heathrow delivers for London and the UK the best possible opportunities to attract business here to Britain. So we want to be among the world's best. And the people that we look to for that are airports like Changi in Singapore, Hong Kong, Incheon in Korea. So those are the people who are rated by passengers among the best airports in the world. And it's not about just physical infrastructure. We've got some world-class facilities, particularly with the new Terminal 2 and Terminal 5. But it's also about passenger service and the way in which we make sure that passengers can fly through the airport every time. We have good ways of getting into the airport. We reduce delays in the air. And we make sure that for different types of passengers, we think about their needs and deliver the service that's appropriate to them. So if you are travelling with your family, your needs will be very different to when you're travelling on business and you just want to get through quickly. And we need to make sure we deliver you a seamless experience for those differing needs. The second message is, the first of the four messages I give is that we've got to beat the regulatory settlement. Now, you'll know that we've got a challenging regulatory settlement, over 100 million of additional revenue, 600 million of cost savings. If we only aim to deliver those, then we will underperform. We have to aim for more. And so that's my message to my teams. We need to be looking for more opportunities. We need to deliver them quicker. And we've made a good start to that. But I want to make sure that we are pushing the business as hard as we can. We're being ambitious about that. My second message about continuous improvement. This is very much building on Colin's legacy. Improvements in passenger experience, improvements in punctuality and resilience, and lower costs of operating at Heathrow, not just for us, but for the whole airport community, so that we are competitive among the other big European airports. The third message is about winning approval for a third runway. This is something that we can win and we can deliver, and I'll come on to that in a moment. And the fourth one I call getting our mojo back. This is about us being confident about what a great team we have at Heathrow, what a great contribution we make to the UK, nationally and to our local communities, and trying to make sure that Heathrow is a place of choice to work, somewhere that people aspire to come and work, across the country, in different kinds of specialisms, particularly for local people. We can offer great career opportunities, taking people through local schools, all the way through our organisation, giving them opportunities to fulfil their potential. And the way I term that is that my ambition is that one day it'll be someone who's come up from one of our local schools who's standing here doing my job. If we can create the kind of organisation that gives people the opportunity to fulfil that potential, then we'll have succeeded. Let me talk a little bit about our ambitions for the third runway. And this isn't about concrete. This is about our ambition for Britain's place in the world. For 350 years, we have been at the heart of the global economy, a trading nation, an island, reaching out across the world, competitive, entrepreneurial, creative, making the most of the advantages that we have. And that's an advantage that is being overwhelmed. For many years, our advantage was based on the ports. Increasingly, it's been based on the airports, with Heathrow the most international airport in the world. But we're losing that position, both to the French, who now have more long-haul destinations than Heathrow does, and to Dubai, who now have more international passengers every year than Heathrow does. It's an advantage that we will not maintain unless we fight to retain it. So for future generations, we need to make sure we're making the right choices. And it's a battle that Heathrow should win, that the UK should win. We are better located than the other airports that I've just spoken about. And with modern technology, we have the entire world within range of Heathrow. You can get to over 95% of global GDP today on a direct flight from Heathrow. That's what 787s do. They're not hub busters. They enhance the power of a hub. Because even a 787 with 350, 400 passengers on board needs to be filled every day of the week, every week of the year. And only a hub airport can deliver that by pooling demand from all across Europe and a wider geography. So Heathrow is absolutely in the right place to be the leading hub in the world. And actually, when you look at who is buying 787s, it isn't low-cost carriers. It's a few charter carriers, but it's primarily network carriers operating from a hub. The model for reaching long-haul markets has not changed with the advent of 787s. It has got stronger. And Heathrow should be the winner in this battle. And not only do we have the ability to get to anywhere in the world, we have the strength of the London market. London is the most valuable originating and destination market in the world. That's why we have such a healthy aviation market. London should be able to win over Paris, which is a less strong OD market, and certainly should win over Frankfurt, which is primarily a hub market. It's a battle we should win, but we're fighting it with both arms tied behind our back. And there are lots of places that we need to get to that you can only get to with a long-haul flight. And I've just illustrated here some of the cities around the world that you can get to from other hubs in Europe that you can't get to from Heathrow today. And I'll come on to those in a moment. So I'm not saying that these are all the markets that we should be connected to. There may be some other markets as well as this that you can think of. But it just illustrates that if you can get here from Amsterdam, if you can get here from Frankfurt, then you can definitely get here from London. London should be the winner on these routes. And many of these are important markets. You can see the number of markets in China alone that we don't get to today. Wuhan, Chongqing. Those are cities that in the future we will need to be trading with at a high degree, given that China is now becoming the biggest market in the whole world. If Britain is going to win the race for growth, we need to be better connected to China than the French and the Germans. It's as simple as that. That's a competition we're losing today. Paris Charles de Gaulle has 63 flights a week to mainland China. Heathrow has 44. We've been quite successful, in spite of our capacity constraints, in increasing frequencies to markets such as Guangzhou and to Shanghai. Just over the last 6 months, we've added flights through British Airways to Chengdu. But there is so much more that we could do. There's massive demand to get from China to the UK and vice versa. We cannot fulfil it today. And I know of British business people who will fly from London to Paris to get a connection because they have more choice of flights from Paris than they have from London. That should not happen. And we need to fight to make sure that we protect the interests of the British economy. And if Gatwick, who claimed that they would be able to meet this gap, if they really were able to meet it, they'd be doing it today. They have plenty of capacity. There's plenty of demand from China. How many flights do you think they have every week to China? Two a week in the summer. That's all that they have been able to achieve in 5 years of independent management with plenty of capacity. That illustrates that the hub model is the only way to get to these distant markets. And if we want to connect to China, if we want to fulfil the potential of the UK as the world's leading trading nation, we need to expand at Heathrow. So let me come on to our proposal. And this is what we presented to the Davis Commission back in May. And if you remember, the Davis Commission has been set up by the government to look at what is the best option to keep Britain as an economic hub. And they shortlisted three options in total, two of them at Heathrow, one of which we are promoting. It's called the Northwest option. There's a second proposal which is being promoted by an independent company, Heathrow Hub, which is to extend our northern runway. And there is a third proposal from Gatwick that they're evaluating. And they're also considering whether to include a new airport in the Thames Estuary, effectively moving Heathrow out to the Thames Estuary as a possible option, but that's not been included yet. We think this is the right answer. We can expand at Heathrow. It's a better proposal than we had on the table 5 years ago that was rejected by this government. And it's better for a number of reasons, partly because it's a longer runway. It allows us to accommodate more long-haul flights, and it also allows us to offer alternation. That means that people living in the fly path will have times of day when they won't be flown over, and that's an important issue for local people. And these proposals have been based on the feedback we've had from local people. We've moved the runway further south so that the flight path comes in over the M4. Again, it's avoiding houses, and it's flying over the motorway. We've reduced the number of homes that would be affected. We've preserved important local heritage sites and the big M25, M4 junction that we wouldn't need to impact. It's a much better proposal. It also allows us to double the size of cargo. Cargo is a massively important part of economics for our airlines. It's also massively important to the UK, being able to export to global markets. And if you just think back to the chart I showed on the destinations we don't reach, if you think about tech companies in the UK, they ought to be able to connect to some of their key markets. San Jose for Silicon Valley, that's somewhere you can get to from European hubs you can't get to from Heathrow yet. Chongqing, where half the laptops in the world are built, you can't get to from the UK, you can from other European hubs. And Osaka, where Panasonic are based, you can't get there from Heathrow, you can from other European hubs. They are all markets that tech companies in the UK should be able to get to quickly and easily to help to build their businesses and to help export their wares. And this is deliverable. It's deliverable politically. There's been a huge change in sentiment towards Heathrow and Heathrow expansion locally. Increasingly, when I speak to people locally, it's a question of when Heathrow expands and not if, and how can we come up with the best proposal to get the benefits of growth locally and also mitigate some of the impacts of growth locally. And this is a very healthy conversation that we should be having. And part of this is also helping politicians to come around behind us. We've seen a big change in sentiment among local political leaders because when they have been going around canvassing in the recent elections, they have been overwhelmed by the number of posters they've seen in people's windows saying back Heathrow. And it's shown that there is a silent majority who support expansion of Heathrow and see the opportunities that that can bring for them and their families. And it delivers a huge amount of benefit for the UK economy, over £100 billion of economic benefit, with £15.6 billion of private funding. So we may well be coming back here to you in 5 years' time, telling you what a fantastic opportunity we have to invest. About £11 billion of that is in airport infrastructure, £1 billion in surface access. That's primarily local roads, trying to keep cars away from local communities. And £3.6 billion invested in the community and the environment, trying to make sure while we're making so much change locally that we can actually enhance some of the quality of life for local people. So that is the choice that we face. Do we want to connect all of the UK to global growth, connecting in cities from the UK that have been cut off from growth over the last few years, as airlines have had to make a false choice between whether to maintain a domestic route or add a new long-haul route that would benefit cities like Inverness. If you imagine that you are a salmon farmer in the north of Scotland, as there are many of, you should be able to get your high-quality fresh salmon to the markets in Tokyo within 24 hours. With a flight from Inverness to Heathrow, you can do that. Without one, you can't. That helps build exports for the UK. It helps to spread the benefits of growth across the whole of the UK. Our plans are deliverable. We have been able to fund £11 billion of investment in Heathrow over the last 10 years. We've completely transformed the experience at Heathrow. This is something that we can do, and we've proven that we can deliver with your support. And ultimately, it comes down to a choice. What kind of country do we want to be? Do we want to be, in the European vernacular, do we want to be a Champions League country, or do we want to be Championship? That means that either you're right at the top of your game, or you're on the margin. Do we want to be at the heart of the global economy, as we have been for hundreds of years, or do we want to be on a branch line? When you look at Gatwick's proposals, that is what they are proposing. They're saying London should give up trying to be a hub for the world. Dubai can do a better job than us. We should let them get on with it and concentrate on more short-haul flights to Europe. That's not a good enough future, in my mind, for the British people. So that's the choice that we face. Do we want to be at the heart of the global economy, or do we want to be on the branch line? And that's the argument that I am making. And we will need your support to make sure that when the Davis Commission comes to make its recommendation and when politicians come to judge on that, they see the weight of support from business people like you who travel around the world and need to get directly from London to your global markets and value the benefits you get from direct daily flights, high frequency, to all the places you need to get to. That's what Heathrow will deliver for you. Thank you. Now, I'm going to close the presentations there and open up the session for questions. We'll invite questions, first of all, from in the room, and then we'll go outside the room onto the lines. And if you have a question, please could you put your hand up, and someone will come to you with a microphone. And if you could give your name and organization, that would be great. But please wait until the microphone comes to you, and that will allow people on the line to hear your question, and we can capture that on the recording as well. Thank you. I always ask for at least three questions when we do these things, so who would like to ask something? Here we are. Thank you.
Thank you. Miguel Medina, JB Capital. You mentioned retail revenues as one of the growth drivers during Q6. And if I recall correctly, when you sold World Duty Free, you signed a 12-year contract. Can you change the terms of the contract to drive that improvement, or there is something else that you are doing that is going to contribute to that growth from retail revenues?
Well, to be more precise, we signed a 14-year contract, but you are absolutely right. This contract is still ongoing. Definitely, you can do two things, and we are doing two things. First of all, is improving the quality of the offering, working hard with WDF to improve the quality of the offering and improving the choices and making the existing agreement productive and delivering growth in revenues. But indeed, we are always open to discussions, and obviously, I cannot discuss commercial negotiations with private parties. That would be inappropriate. But we obviously look at every possibility, because obviously, you can think of a longer-term relationship in many different ways. You can revisit your CapEx commitments, you can improve the quality of the shops, and through working together, you can achieve better goals. So, but obviously, let me stop here. I cannot obviously share openly discussions that may or may not be taking place with some of our partners. But it's a combination of both, obviously.
If I can just add to that, we are continually looking at our retail mix to make sure it meets with the needs of passengers. So you'll see continual change as we go through Q6 in that. And the first bit of change we're making is in Terminal 5, as José mentioned. And some of the brands we have coming in there will really enhance the retail offer that we have at Heathrow. And that's in the context of Heathrow already being rated by passengers as the best airport for retail in the world for the last 5 years running. So we announced the other day that Louis Vuitton will have their first European airport store in Terminal 5. I think it's only their second airport store in the world after Incheon. So that is a huge coup for us, and we're delighted by that. But it's also very good for our passengers, and I think it will help us to support not only the passengers who like shopping at Louis Vuitton, of whom there are many, but also help us to reduce our aeronautical charges in the future. Second question. Thank you.
Andrew Paulson from RBS. Just a question. The migration of the carriers into Terminal 2 looks like it's going very well. That clearly makes capacity available in the rest of the airport. What does the future hold for Terminal 1, Terminal 3, those terminals which are presumably now losing carriers into Terminal 2?
Well, the future for Terminal 1 is short. We will be closing Terminal 1 in October next year. I should just pause for a cheer here for anyone who has traveled from some of the further stands in Terminal 1. So effectively, the new Terminal 2 replaces both the old Terminal 2 and the old Terminal 1. And our plan then, over the period of time, is that we will demolish the old Terminal 1, double the size of Terminal 2 over its footprint, and that will allow us to move all of the Terminal 3 carriers and passengers into that expanded Terminal 2. So at that point, we'll have two large terminals, Terminal 5 and Terminal 2. I'm sure we will think about renaming them at that point, and two main gateways into the airport. And that'll be connected in a third runway world with a track transit system so that any passenger can get to any part of the airport, staying airside on a train, and any bag can move around the airport at any time. And that'll make us a really efficient hub. with two main access points, one in the west based on Terminal 5, one in the east based on Terminal 2, and very efficient transfer flows between them. And sitting underneath that, a fantastic transport connection with Crossrail, Heathrow Express, and the Piccadilly line, and rail links out to the west, linking into Wales and the west of England, and down to the south, linking into Waterloo. And also a link, of course, through Crossrail into HS2. So physically, we will be one of the best connected airports in the world. Thank you. Now, we just need a third question before we can move out to the phones. Well, let's pause there and move out and see if there are any questions on the line.
Okay, at this time we're not receiving any questions from the phones.
Well, that's a good signal that we've either satisfied all of your questions or your interests, or you'd like to ask your questions privately later, which you're very welcome to do. So thank you all for coming to join us. Thank you on the lines for dialing in, and thank you for your support in funding the transformation of Heathrow, and we look forward to your support in many years to come. Thank you.